Introduction to Ignition Point. I happen to be a professional speaker as well as a professional writer. In fact, I have been speaking, for money, for 30 years now and doing fairly well. There is an organization that puts out an annual entitled Finding the Right Speaker, in which various lecture agencies advertise their wares, and you can be sure that my lecture agent mentions me in his advertisement. The organization thought they would punch up their 1981 edition with a story, and they naturally thought of me. I agreed, thinking it would be a pleasant combination of my two careers, wrote Ignition Point in January 1981, and it appeared in the annual. Since I am certain the readership of the annual is limited, it is with pleasure I include the story in this collection, so that it might find its more appropriate science fiction market. Story 11. Ignition Point. "Let me get this straight," said Anthony Myers, leaning across his desk toward the man in the chair facing him. "Your computer does not write the speech?"
"No, you do.
Or someone else does." Nicholas Jansen was quite composed. He was a small man, very neatly dressed, with an old-fashioned knotted tie that did not seem to make him the least bit self-conscious in a world of turtlenecks. He said, "What I have developed is a series of words, phrases, sentences that induce reactions in specific groups of people, divided by sex, age, ethnic groups, language, occupation, place of residence, or almost anything else conceivable. If you could describe the audience your man would be addressing in sufficient detail, then I could supply you with precisely the sort of thing his talk should include. The more we know about the audience, the more accurately my computer program can produce the key words and phrases. They are woven into a speech."
"Can they?
Will they make sense?" "That's up to the ingenuity of the speechwriter. But it doesn't really matter. If you're pounding a drum, you might get the audience stirred up until their feet and hearts are pounding with it, till they reach ignition point. Sense is analogous to tune. But a drum doesn't have to beat out a tune. It merely establishes a rhythm. You can put in as much tune as you can, but it is the rhythm you're after. Do you understand?" Myers rubbed his chin and stared at the other thoughtfully. "Have you tried this before?" Jansen smiled narrowly. "Only unofficially, in a small way. Still, I know what I'm talking about. I'm an occlologist."
"A what?"
"A student of mob psychology, and the first, as far as I know, who has truly computerized the matter. And you know this will work, in theory."
"No, I know it might work, in theory."
"And you want to try it out on me? What if it doesn't work?"
"Then what have you to lose? I'm not charging you.
It's useful in my work, and if I may believe what I have been told, your man is lost if you don't use my services." Myers drummed his fingers on the desk softly. "Look, let me explain about my man. He looks impressive. He's got a good voice. He's amiable and likable. Properly handled, I can make him a corporation executive, or an ambassador, or the President of the United States. The trouble is, he has no brains to speak of, and he needs me to supply them. But the one thing he has been able to do without me is to deliver a speech in such a way as to fool people into thinking he does have brains. This he cannot do, even if the speech is written out for him. The speech may be intelligent, and yet he can't say it in such a way as to make himself seem intelligent. Do you think you can write a speech better than I can?"
"Not better. Just foolproof. I can make it possible for him to push the right buttons and ignite the audience."
"What do you mean, ignite?"
"To catch fire. Isn't that what ignite means? Every crowd has its ignition point, though every crowd requires something different for ignition."
"You may be selling me a load of nonsense, Mr. Jansen. There's no speech so foolproof that a nincompoop won't spoil it. On the contrary,
A nincompoop might deliver it more surely than you could, since he won't be thinking for himself. May I meet him? That is, if you want my services.
You understand that everything said here is confidential?
Certainly.
Since I intend to turn this to commercial use eventually, I am more interested in confidentiality than you are.
Barry Winston Block was not quite 40. He had played semi-pro baseball in his younger days. He had made his way through a Midwestern college with minimal effort, and he had been moderately successful as a salesman. His appearance was impressive, not because he was handsome, but because he looked physically powerful and gave the impression of possessing a mature wisdom. His hair was already showing streaks of gray, and he had a way of throwing his head up and smiling warmly that filled you full of confidence in him. It took an hour or so, usually, to realize that there was nothing behind the amiability but additional amiability. Right now, Block felt uncomfortable. Ever since he had tied up with Myers, he had been a prey to discomfort. He wanted to get ahead. It was his secret desire to be a congressman, and sometimes he wondered if he might not be a great evangelist. But the trouble was that people made him nervous. After he had used up his big grin, it came time to talk, and he never had anything particular to say. And no one had ever made him feel quite as uncomfortable as this little man, with his gimlet eyes, who would sit there absolutely motionless while Block read his speeches. It was hard enough to talk to a real audience, which rustled and coughed and seemed to be annoyed with him for not finishing. This little man, he had to remember his name was Jansen, who never responded in any way, just choked him off. No, he responded in one way. He invariably handed Block another speech to read. Each one was a little different, and each one appealed to him somehow, but he never felt as if he did them justice. It made him sad somehow, and ashamed. The manuscript presented to him on this day seemed worse than all the others. He looked at it in dismay.
"What are all these marks?"
"Well now, B.B., Myers adopted the soothing tone he almost always used with Block.
"Just let Mr. Jansen explain."
"It's direction. It's something you must learn, but it won't be difficult. A dash means a pause. An underlining means an emphasis. A downward arrow before a word means you let your voice drop a couple of notes. An upward arrow means you let it rise. A curved arrow means you let things fade off in contempt. If it curves downward. If it curves upward, your voice rises in anger. A parenthesis means a small smile. A double parenthesis means a grin. A triple parenthesis means a chuckle. You never laugh out loud. A line over a word means you look grim. A double line means you repeat. An asterisk..."
Block said, "I can't remember all that."
Myers, from behind Block, mouthed worriedly, "I don't think he will." Jansen seemed unperturbed by the double denial. "You will with practice. The stakes are high and worth a little trouble." Myers said,
"Go ahead, B.B. Just give it a read-through, and Mr. Jansen will help you out as you go along."
Block looked as though he wished to object further, but his native amiability won out. He put the manuscript on the lectern and began to read it. He stumbled, peered at the manuscript with a frown, began again and skidded to a halt. Jansen explained, and Block began again. They spent an hour over the first three paragraphs before calling a halt. Myers said,
"It's awful."
Jansen said, "How did you do the first time you tried to ride a bicycle?" Block repeated the speech all the way through twice that day, twice more the second day. A second speech was prepared, not quite the same, but just as empty of real content. After a week, Block said,
"I'm getting the hang of it. It seems to me I'm getting so that it sounds good."
Myers said with hollow hopefulness, "I think so, too." Jansen said to Myers afterward, "He's doing better than I expected. He's got a certain potentiality, but...
But what?
Jansen shrugged.
Nothing. We'll just have to see.
Jansen said, I think he's ready for an audience now, provided it's a homogeneous one, which we can analyze accurately.
The American Association of Textile Weavers needs a speaker, and I think I can place BB with them. Can you handle that audience?
Weavers? Said Jansen thoughtfully.
The economic position would be homogeneous, and I suspect the educational level would not be too wide a spread.
I would need to have a breakdown on what city and state they represent, and on the percentages coming from establishments of different size. Age, sex, and the usual, too, of course.
I'll see what I can dig up from the union, but there isn't much time, you know.
We'll try to work quickly. We've got a great deal of the basics worked out. Your man is learning how to deliver a speech.
Myers laughed. He's gotten to the point where he almost convinces me.
You know, I wouldn't want him in Congress. I would want him on television, selling my views.
His, I mean.
Your views, you mean, said Jansen dryly. He has none.
It doesn't matter. I'm counting my chickens.
Block did well at the AATW cocktail party. He followed his instruction, had smiled, had talked just a bit, but not too much, had told a harmless joke or two, and dropped a few names, and had, for the most part, done a lot of listening and nodding. And yet Myers, from his table up front, felt a certain tightness. If BB flopped, they could try again. But if he flopped, would there be enough in him to make it worth his while to try again? This might be the test that would show that BB just didn't have it. What a waste, with that appearance, with that Roman senator head of his. He stole a glance at Jansen, who sat at his left. The little man seemed utterly composed, but there was a slight contraction of the eyebrows, as though there were a secret worry gnawing at him. The dinner was over. The various business announcements were being made. The committee was being thanked. The people seated on the dais were being introduced. All the maddening details that seemed to be designed for no other purpose than to place additional unnecessary strain upon the speaker. Myers stared earnestly at Block, caught his eye, and held up two fingers briefly.
Go in and get them, BB.
Would he? The speech was an odd one, almost quixotic. It would read oddly in the papers if it ever made the news columns, but it was full of button pushers, according to Jansen and his computer. Block was standing up now. He stepped easily to the lectern and put the manuscript before him. He was always good at that, doing it slickly and unobtrusively, so that the audience never really had it rubbed in their face that the speech was going to be read. Myers thought, not entirely irrelevantly, of the time he had attended a meeting at which the speaker had somehow managed to knock off his manuscript with an over-energetic gesture. The manuscript could be picked up and rearranged, but an audience died at that moment and could not be revived. Block smiled at the audience and began slowly.
Don't wait too long to speed up, BB.
He didn't. He quickened the beat. At times he stopped briefly to puzzle out a symbol, but fortunately that sounded like deliberation, the kind of thought you would expect of mature wisdom. It helped to have that appearance. Then he spoke still more quickly and emotionally, and to Myers' surprise, he could feel the drumbeat start. There were those key phrases, with just the right kind of emphasis, and in response, he could feel the audience stir. Laughter came on cue, and at one point there was a patter of applause. Myers had never heard applause interrupt Block before. Block's face looked a little flush, and at one point he brought his fist down on the lectern, and the little fluorescent lamp shook.
Don't knock it over, BB.
The audience stamped its feet in response. Myers felt the mounting excitement within himself, even though he knew exactly how carefully the speech had been prepared. He leaned toward Jansen.
He's igniting the audience, wouldn't you say?
Jansen nodded once. His lips scarcely moved. Yes, and maybe.
Block had paused briefly in his talk, just long enough to tighten the audience into a knot of tension. And then he brought his hand down savagely on the lectern, picked up the manuscript in a crumpled mess, and threw it aside.
"I don't need this," he said, his voice rising into a distinct note of triumph. "I don't want it. I wrote it in cold blood before I had you all before me. Let me speak now from my heart, as it comes to me, standing here before you. Let me tell you all, friends and Americans, you and I, together, what I see in the world today, and what I want to see. And believe me, my friends, the two are not the same."
There was a roar in response. Myers clutched at Jansen wildly. He can't make it on his own. But he could and did. He spoke through and over the applause and the shouting. It scarcely mattered if he were heard. He raised both arms as though to embrace the audience, and a voice shouted, "Go on! Give it to them!" Block gave it to them. Exactly what he said scarcely mattered, but when it was over, there was a wild and jubilant standing ovation. "What happened?" said Myers through the noise. He was applauding as loudly as everyone else. Jansen remained seated, in a strange attitude of collapse. He clutched at Myers, drew him close, and said in a shaking voice, "Don't you see what happened? It was a one-in-a-million shot. Just toward the end, I began to wonder if it were possible. It can happen."
"What are you talking about?"
"The audience ignited, and Block was speaking to an ignited audience for the first time in his life. And speakers have their ignition point, too. Block himself ignited, and an ignited speaker can carry public opinion and move mountains."
"Who? B.B.?"
"Yes."
"Well, that's great."
"Is it? When ignited, he's got power, and if he finds out he has, why would he need you? Or me? And if so, where will he go? There have been great charismatics before who have not always led to glory."
Block was with them, people crowding about him. He said to Myers in a breathless undertone, "That was easy. I feel great."
He turned to those about him, laughing, holding them all with no trouble. Myers looked after him, confused. Jansen looked after him, afraid.